It's now time to look at the laws that govern our nation. Human rights, equality, justice, and accountability all in one place. What are your rights and how are you accountable? Lawful Wednesday, about your civil rights and liberties.
Oh yes, and this Lawful Wednesday, we look at the recently passed law, the Cyber Crimes and Computer Misuse Law. Now, despite its good intention of combating cyber bullying, this piece of legislation has been received with mixed feelings by various sections of our society.
Now, to get an expert's view on this particular cyber crimes law, well, we are glad to be joined by an expert legal to give us a legal interpretation of the law. We are joined by Advocate Wani Stephen Mark, who is working for the Witness Law Advocates.
Well, yes. Good morning, Stephen. Thank you so much for making our time to speak to us.
Good morning.
Right, so could you bring us a speed on this cyber crimes and computer misuse law?
Okay, let me say this is not a recently passed
That was in 2021,
policy.
Around December.
2021 May.
So, yeah, or May.
Yes, okay. May. 2021 May. And also it was not passed, but rather the president signed it into law. Mm-hmm. So basically, our constitution gives the president right under Article 86, 1. It gives the president right to sign urgent legislations into law when the parliament is not in session. And we all know that last year in May, the parliament was not yet reconstituted. So that's why and how this policy came into effect.
Yes, and much as, you know, the president have this particular, you know, rights to sign this into law, how quickly it was done? Does it raise some eyebrows here?
Well, I think when we look into how many policies were tabled when the parliament was not in session, we would say, you know, there is a little bit of question mark why this one was passed urgently, mm-hmm. when we know, for example, the data protection bill mm-hmm. has been there since 2020. You know, and until now it's still a bill, while the cyber crimes and computer misuse provisional order was signed in the far more, you know, sooner time. So this obviously, you know, is a bit problematic, especially when we look into the law itself. Mm. Would just be like, okay, there is a need to look into this again.
Right. So is there a difference when the president signs things into their existence? Is that why it's called an order and not a law? Is there a difference?
Yes, the reason why it's called an order, because it did not go through the, you know, normal procedure that we know of enacting a law, which is through the parliament. That's why it's called a provisional order. However, it has a power of the law, because that's what the constitution say. It will have a power of the law. However, when we look into the same article 86 2 or subsection 2, provides that such orders should be brought back to parliament when, as soon as the parliament, you know, resumes its
session.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So the wording of the constitution is very clear. It says as soon as, you know, the parliament comes in session, this order is supposed to, you know, table before the parliament. Mm-hmm. And we are over 1 year plus.
Yeah.
Has this happened?
No, it's 1.5 years.
From the information that I have, that has not happened yet. And the Minister of Justice have recently, I think about a month ago, formed the Specialized Public Prosecution Attorney, which is one of the powers that this particular order gives the Minister of Justice to form a specialized prosecution unit.
Right.
And we've witnessed that one has already happened. And, you know, there is now process of implementing this law and putting it into order.
Mm. But is there still, will this law still, or will this order still find its way to Parliament?
We are pushing I work with another entity called ICOM, or Internet and Communications. We're trying to push with the stakeholders and parliamentarians as well to see how this order can be tabled before the parliament. Mm. And, you know, hopefully people will get a chance to submit their inputs, and maybe it will be enacted into a law. So,
right.
so there is an effort that I'm trying to do through Internet and Communications, or ICOM, to see how this order can be tabled before Parliament.
Right,
you know,
and
for the
just
due process.
To compliment Sabit, what does it take to bring this back into Parliament?
Well, it takes a lot of lobby. It takes a lot of consultations with the stakeholders, especially the National Communication Authority, to just highlight the importance of taking this through Parliament. So it needs everyone to be involved and to lend their support also to make sure that this order is taken back to Parliament to be enacted.
Right. Yeah. So what are some of the components of this law?
Well, when we look into this law is quite interesting because apart from it, in Section 6, gives the Minister of Justice to establish this prosecution unit. It also gives a responsibility or obligation to service providers. This responsibility includes collaborating and working with government agencies to avail information that is necessary for enforcement of the law. And also, this particular legislation also provides for about 22 crimes or offences that is punishable by this order, including publication of false information. And other things like publication of indecent content, hacking, and so on. Yes.
Yes. So basically, let's go to your first point. Then, this law provides for the provision of, let's say, service providers like the MTN Zia or Zain to give information of my private conversation if I am accused of something. Is that right?
Yes.
And then also social media. One has to be extremely careful now what you publish on social media, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, all that, because you will get into trouble.
Well, when we look into Section 19 of this order, of the Cybercrimes and Computer Misuse Provisional Order, it's basically a criminalized publication of false information. That section is the wording of the section is quite broad in a sense that anything can be false information. It puts, people in a little bit tricky situation in terms of expressing their opinion, because whatever that you post, if someone think that it is, false information,
they will drag you into court.
And mainly because also this order does not clearly define what is false information. It just went direct into, punishing it. So this is one of the problems within the Act.
Right. And looking at the ambiguity that is in that law, the order has been received by mixed reactions, many thinking that it is here to silence them. Do you share the same sentiments?
Well, I think, we cannot live in a cyber utopianism, whereby people don't want law and order within the cyberspace and people want to say anything they want. This is not the case, especially when we look into, how South Sudanese, use their social media platforms.
Yeah, yeah.
Recently during the Magui incidents, there is a lot of dis and misinformation circulating around. Also, we have witnessed recently there is a lot of revenge porn activities, So there is a need to regulate. There is a need to set law and order in cyberspace. However, I would say the way our government have pursued this avenue is a little bit problematic. So, yes, when we look into other aspects like digital rights, privacy, freedom of speech, this policy is a bit problematic. But I would say this policy does not only target that, it also covers other crimes. But yes, this policy can be used, or it may be used, to basically silence maybe political opponents and so on.
Yes, and looking at the way how it was passed and all done till it becomes an order, obviously a little suspicious. But how much room does that provide, that this particular law provides for the freedom of speech?
Well, when we look into protection of freedom of speech, this is not the legislation that is designed to do that. This legislation is designed to basically protect users online, to curb cyber crimes, and from its nature, it's clearly not a legislation that would say promotes freedom of speech, especially when we look into the vagueness and ambiguity of Section 19. And when we go back to, for example, Section 9, there is no clear definition of what is false information. So when we combine all this together, we'd say this is not it, you know.
Mm. Right. So anybody just can be a victim of this particular law if it is being not yet really completely implemented. We haven't found someone tried yet for all this time, but as you said, it's already being established. The court is being, or a special
specialized prosecution.
Yes.
So is it functional? Is it up and running?
Their location is functional. They have the venue and everything, but until now, even the police, for example, mm-hmm. they still when you know, launching or when, for example, investigating, they still use the Penal Code Act. Mm. Recently, I have or currently, I'm handling one of these cases whereby it's the victim alleged that, you know, he was being sort of defamed and whatever through social media. Mm-hmm. But that should not be the case. You know, this matter should be completely under this legislation. But until now, even our law enforcement agents, like the police, they still use the Penal Code Act instead of referring to this piece of legislation. Mm-hmm. The specialized PPA, I haven't seen them in operation, but I think there is three public prosecution attorneys who have already designated, you know, to be in that specialized prosecution unit.
Mm. All right. Now, with this law, definitely it's going to be implemented, and when it comes to other laws, like also in our constitution, the other laws of course, the promotion of freedom of speech and all that, how does it, you know, interconnect, or how does it work here? Because the constitution as well provide for freedom of speech, and then this law now can literally take away your freedom of speech, because anything can be misinterpreted. Where do we, you know, where's the interconnection here?
So this law by itself does not take freedom of speech away from you. You know, however, how it will be implemented, mm-hmm. will define whether, you know, users would be free to express themselves online or not. So we personally, I'm looking forward to see how the government is going to implement this piece of legislation. This law is the substantive law. Mm. You know, in cyber crimes or in any law, there is three pieces of legislation that are supposed to go together. Mm-hmm. One is a substantive law that basically highlights, okay, these are the crimes and these are the penalties, or these are the legislations that basically defines what are, you know, acceptable behaviors. And this law does that, you know, clearly. But also, we're supposed to have now the procedural laws. Now, these procedural laws are supposed to now determine, okay, if there is a crime happened, how is it supposed to be litigated, you know, or prosecuted? Especially when we talk about cyber crimes, we are diving into a very technical field or a very technical sector. So, what are the rules of procedures? For example, the evidence law for collecting digital evidence. You know, this law in Section 10 only states that digital evidence, you know, the collection of digital evidence should only be for specialized or for people who are authorized to do that. But then it doesn't highlight how this evidence is supposed to be collected, stored, and all that. Mm-hmm. So there is a gap in there, especially when we look into our Criminal Procedure Act. It doesn't provide for how cybercrimes are supposed to be litigated. The same thing with our Code of Evidence. Mm-hmm. Our Code of Evidence only says that digital evidence should be accepted in court, but then it doesn't highlight how. Mm-hmm. You know. So there is these missing pieces of legislations now are the ones that would definitely put the people implementing this provisional order to do whatever they want, because there is no guiding or guidelines mm-hmm. that guides them into how this cyber crimes are supposed to be prosecuted.
Yes, and we are entering into a very vital situation here, a very vital moment in the country, where probably there will be elections, and there will be, of course, a lot of political processes taking place as the implementation of the Revitalized Peace Agreement continues. Now, with this law, should other political parties or other politicians or, you know, journalists, should they be a little worried with this particular law now being implemented?
I think,
or is there a reason is there a reason for concern, because it might be used to silence some dissenting voices?
I think there is a clear reasons for everyone to be concerned, not only politicians but even you know, activists.
I didn't mention that, but of course it's there. I meet also activists, yes, journalists, and even the ordinary citizens,
including ordinary citizens. So there is a clear reason to do that, but I think before we reach into 2024, the election time, we have ample of time to try to see or to try to lobby for the procedural rules, laws to be enacted. We have enough time to also lobby for some of the preventive laws to be implemented, because when we look into regulation of cyberspace, there is mainly three ways of how cyberspace is regulated. Government-led regulation is one. And this is what we are doing in South Sudan, you know, enacting laws and, you know, punishing people for committing these crimes. This is only one. And it is a method that has been proven to be inadequate, and it doesn't really serve the purpose, because cyber crimes is usually, you know, beyond the jurisdictions of your country, even though this law permits for that, but it's still, you know. Yes, there is enough time for us to try to see how these policies, missing policies like the procedural laws, the evidence, the rules of evidence that governs collection and admissibility of digital evidence to be enacted. So we have time to do that.
Great. And now, just before we conclude this conversation here, what role do you think the members of parliament can play here? Because, well, the bill is supposed to go to them first before, after they pass, and then it comes to the president for signing. But now it is the other way around. What role do you think members of parliament can do here to safeguard, you know, and make sure that this is in line with the people and to help the people?
I think there is a big role that the parliament is supposed to do, because one, they are the, you know, they are our representative. Look up to them to you know, make sure that the laws that are there is made to protect us, you know. There is two specific committees that should be on top of this matter. One is the specialized committee on ICT, I think media and ICT in the parliament. But also there is the specialized committee on security, because this law addresses it's merges between these two sectors. So this committee is supposed to now look. I would urge this committee to start looking into this policy and try to see how this policy can be brought back through, of course, some of the work, little effort that we're trying to do.
Yes.
All right, Stephen, thank you so much for time to speak to us.
just one time for Stephen before you go, Stephen. It's good to have to talk to you so we can make this very clear. Stephen, right. I won't let you go without mentioning the fact that you ran for the Member of Parliament for East Africa, and unfortunately you did not make it, but of course you gave it a very, very good run. How will you say this kind of laws, when it comes to comparing it to our neighboring countries or to the East African community generally, how will you compare this law to the rest of the community when it comes to the freedom of expression, freedom of speech, and of course freedom of association?
So
and the freedoms.
So thank you so much. Just to be brief, yes, I did not win the ELA election. However, when we look into this policy in particular, and we look into other policies across the East African region, we'd realize that this is an issue that is not only South Sudan is facing, but also countries in the region are facing the same. Uganda, for example, during the election, they resorted to banning Facebook.
To blacking, you know, out,
Banning Facebook completely, which is a huge violation of freedom of speech. The only country that is a bit, in the middle is Kenya. That is one of the things that I wanted to actually push through the East African Legislative Assembly, to try to push for harmonized policies, legislation within the East African Legislative Assembly to govern such matters. However, that, you know, did not win, did not go through. But
right,
yes.
But maybe better luck next time.
Yeah, of course.
If I am to run. What are your final remarks before you go?
My final remark is this. Yes, there is a need to regulate cyberspace. There is a need to regulate conduct on cyberspace. Yes, there are some actors or some citizens misuse their online platforms. But that does not mean that the government should have such policies that hugely impact privacy, freedom of speech, and so on. So we need to look for an adequate means of regulation. In that, I would say there is what we call a core regulation. Co-regulation basically combines government effort and effort by platforms to regulate conduct on cyberspace. So we need to look beyond just, you know, locking people up for 10 years, for 5 years. We need to look into how can we regulate conduct by design, or how can we regulate the code, the terms and conditions of these platforms that people use. So whenever they do something, it is automatically taken down, or they are not even allowed to do it, right, instead of, you know, waiting until they do it and then we lock them in.
Punishing
so
them.
Yes.
All right, Stephen, thank you so much for coming to Mirai Studios. We wish you all the best.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And Stephen Wani Mark is a lawyer, of course, an advocate with a Witness Law Advocate.
And that brings us to just coming up to 8:03. Of course, the news summary will be coming to you this morning here. Stay tuned if you can. This is the Miraya Breakfast Show. My name is Sabid Williams.
And my name is Irene Lasso. We'll be right back.